This is the Unstoppable Authors Podcast with worldbuilding warrior Angeline Trevina,
planning and productivity powerhouse Holly Line,
and formatting fireball Julia Scott.
Every week we bring you discussions on the craft of writing,
author life and business,
and interviews with some of the industry's most unstoppable authors.
A writer's life doesn't have to be solitary. We're here to bust that myth, support you on your journey, and encourage you to be unstoppable. Hello and welcome to episode 158 of the Unstoppable Authors Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Line, and today I have a fantastic interview for you with Sarah Painter, all about marketing your books wide. But before we get into the interview, a quick personal update. It's been a weird week. In fact, this episode sort of crept up on me. I've been chipping away at Felix with no flow of words yet. I'm still doing some tweaks to what I had already written before I jumped projects, and I'm finding my feet again with it, which is fine. It's fine. I'm not in a rush with this book, so. But honestly, for the last week or so, my focus has been on music. So listeners of the podcast may not know this, but I sing as well, and I've recently started playing the guitar. And I have my first solo acoustic set tonight as I record this, and I'm a bundle of nerves. So yeah, I'm also singing with my band at the same event, and that's been chaotic too, with losing our bassist and one of our drummers, and just temporarily they are coming back, and we've had to change our set list, and it's been chaos. So yeah, music has had most of my focus this week, but that's not what you're here for, so let's crack on. No new patrons this week, but a huge thank you to all of our current patrons who sponsor the show. We really appreciate your support. Patrons get early access to episodes, exclusive access to our off-air banter, and the chance to join in with our monthly sessions of Sprints and Giggles, an evening where we do writing sprints, answer questions, and generally have a laugh. If you'd like to join in and also support the show, you can do so for just £3 a month at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. So on to our question of the week. Last week we asked you, what is your biggest book marketing struggle? On Instagram, Trip says he'd like to be able to get ads to work. And as it happens, Trip, we have very good news for you. Starting on the 12th of October, Brian Cohen's famous 5-day Amazon Ads Profit Challenge is coming back. So we will put a link in the show notes for anyone who wants to do that. Angeline and I have both done it. Angeline has had enormous success from using that challenge, and my sales have gone up a lot as well whenever I use the techniques that Brian teaches. I'm just really inconsistent with doing ads. But yeah, I do recommend the challenge. It's really, really good, and the community is fantastic. So if you are struggling with your Amazon ads, then take a look at the link in our show notes. But we had a far bigger response to a different post with a different question. I also asked you where on the plotting discovery writing spectrum you are. And on Instagram, we had Finding Jay Reese say, I often write an outline to get a rough idea of where I'd like the story to go, but then my characters tend to hijack the story by chapter 3. So I would absolutely love more resources for discovery writers. And in our Facebook group, we had replies from David, who says, you're not even mentioning us puzzler writers. As yet to discover what that means. If you know, if you are a puzzler writer, do please get in touch. Brett says, plotting is not the only way. As a plotter myself, I discover my way through life with a couple of goals here and there. If everyone plotted their life, it could soon get so boring and predictable, with a plot twist here and there. But as a discovery lifer, I have learnt recently that plotting is not the be-all and end-all. Mary says, discovery all the way, although I can kind of plan bits of it, but mostly it's a case that I have to start writing in order to find out what's going to happen. Me too, Mary. Quite often I have scenes in my head that I write, but then they end up quite different in the end, or different in parts, or in different parts of the book. But I write them first because they're in my head. And Matthew says, largely a discovery writer, yes, I'd love more resources to support that approach. So thank you everyone for chiming in with those responses. That was really lovely. This week, I would like to know, why have you chosen the publishing path that you're currently on? So whether you are publishing wide or in KU, exclusive to Amazon, do let us know why you chose that, because I think it's an absolutely fascinating topic and is the topic of my interview this week. So without further ado, here is my interview with Sarah Painter. Sarah Painter is a best-selling author of magical fiction, including The Crow Investigations Urban Fantasy Mystery Series, The Lost Girls, and the Harper Family books. She also writes non-fiction for introvert authors. Sarah lives in rural Scotland, drinks too much tea, and is the proud owner of a writing shed. Welcome to Unstoppable Authors, Sarah.
Oh, thank you, Holly. It's lovely to be here.
Your non-fiction books really speak to me so much, because I am very introverted. And it's like, yeah, you're speaking my language. I get this.
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
So do you want to get us started by telling us a bit about your writing journey so far?
Sure. I mean, how long have you got? I'll be as quick as I can. So I'm the sort of probably typical author that you speak to, in that I always wanted to be an author. It was my absolute dream. But self-doubt, fear of failure, fear, anxiety, all of that very much got in the way in my adulthood. And I wasn't making any progress. I wasn't writing books. I wasn't finishing anything. I was just too scared, was the bottom line. So when I got over that, or learned to live with that more accurately, and I started to do it anyway, I wrote a few books. I got one agent. That wasn't quite right. I got rejected by many publishers via that agent, which, you know, happens. Mm-hmm. Wrote some more books, did a master's to try and regain some confidence. After the master's, I wrote a book just for fun. And I got my second agent, who is my current agent, with that book. And that book was my debut, because Sally Ann got a deal with Carina, which is now owned by HarperCollins. So that was in 2012. That was my fourth completed novel. So it was, a few years of close but no cigar, lots of rejection, all the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So that came out in 2013. And then I wrote five books for traditional publishing. And then in 2017, I'd been looking at the indie side with great interest and longing, and learning more and more about it. And I was running the podcast, my own podcast that I'd started, and being part of the community more, speaking to people more, speaking to other authors, speaking to people doing it in different ways, hybrid, indie and trad. And it just clarified things for me, and it gave me a wee bit of confidence. And I thought, I want to try that. So I tried I went indie with my nonfiction book, Stop Worrying, Start Writing, in 2017. And I loved everything about the process. I had come home. I had the control. I had the money. I had, the control. I had control over my career, over my business. It was a business. And that made me very, very happy. So that's what I've been doing since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a common thread, isn't it? That longing for control and just needing to know how all the parts of the machine work. And I think that takes some of the anxiety out of it for a lot of us.
Absolutely does. It absolutely did for me. And I used to think that anyone could do this. Anyone could be independent. And I've realized that that's not true. Mm. What I have realized is that it suits me, because I am quite business minded. I do like control. And those things married together work very, very well. I actually really like the business side. Mm-hmm. Again, not everybody does. And that's completely fine and completely valid. And also my goal, I really dug into my goals, and I got very honest with myself about what my personal definition of success was. And when I was honest about it, that it involved making some money, mm-hmm. and it involved hiring my husband out of his job or letting him retire early. So quite big money at some point, or what I certainly personally would consider big money. Everything got very clear, because I realized that what I wanted, the best possible chance of getting those things was to be the business person, was to be the publisher. I mean, it just, you know, it made perfect logical sense. And then everything else just fell into place. Everything else made sense for me. But as I say, obviously, everybody is different. And what matters is working out not just your own strengths and your own desires and your own preferences, but your own goals, your own definition of success.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you you publish wide. And I've heard you speak about it before. So that was why I wanted to speak to you today. What made you decide to pursue a wide publishing strategy?
Okay, well, there's two main reasons. So the first was that, having started in traditional publishing, I was very, very keen that I put my reader hat on, and I was very, very keen that any readers I was lucky enough to have would see no difference whether I'm being published by HarperCollins or Siskin Press. And that was very important to me, because I wanted them to have a sort of seamless experience. I certainly didn't want to leave any readers I was lucky enough to have who had found me via Kobo and Apple and so on. And then the other reason was that I, you know, absolutely love Amazon and everything that it has, you know, provided for authors, for opportunities. But I am very uncomfortable from a business point of view of having one company be my only source of income. Big proponent of the multiple streams of income idea. It just makes sense. And then also, the more I read about it, because that was already what I was thinking, and then the more I read about it, everything just confirmed that that was the right way for me, in terms of there is a very, very big world out there, you know, and Amazon is not the dominant retailer around the world. And I also was thinking about, in terms of passive marketing, which I'm a big fan of, because I'm an introvert and I'm not great at the marketing side. It's not something I want to, it's not something I want to do more of than I have to. So passive marketing is my favorite thing. So being wide, being in as many different places as possible, is a form of passive marketing, because you're visible in many more places, more opportunities for people to discover you, basically.
Yeah. How would you define passive marketing?
I think passive marketing is also something that I have sometimes referred to as your core marketing. And it is all the things that you do. I want to say one and done, but we both know that sometimes you have to do your one and done tasks again when you recover your book or whatever, because of changing market, changing the style. But they're by and large the stuff that you do very infrequently. So it's your core package. It is your website, your sign up page for your newsletter, the places that people can find you, the buy buttons on your website, my mind just went blank for a second there. the core package of your book. So your sales page and your cover and your title, the categories that you're in, all of those things that should all be working together to let a browser know exactly what sort of book it is, what sort of author you are.
Yeah, that's a really great explanation. Thank you. So this is because I'm very much into Clifton Strengths. So this was on my mind when I wrote this question. Did strategy or impulse carry more weight in choosing a genre?
That's very funny that you phrased it like that, because my answer to that question was all about, definitely not strategy. I write what I want, and then I work out how to market it. Because I interpreted the question as a kind of You know, do you follow your heart or your head, or, you know, do you write to market kind of a question. But now you've thrown Clifton Strengths in there, I'm going to have to say, well, of course, strategy, because I am strategic and overthinking and whatever the other ones, what are they called? Intellection and research. And, you know, I am all the thinking strengths and introvert and a wee bit of relational. Well, that's me, which really made me feel a lot better because, about the fact that I love to plan and do all of those things and think and research and then not actually do anything. So that's where I have to sort of manage myself, is to actually take action. So sorry, you blew my mind with the Clifton Strength. So yes, I probably usually I'm very strategic, but I would say that I'm not a huge proponent of right to market. And that's not because I think it's evil and that people shouldn't do it. I'm not a big proponent of it for myself. And generally, if anyone's struggling to write, that's quite often the sort of conversations I'm having. And there are just easier ways to make money. So I want people to write the books of their heart. I want to write what they're passionate about. I want them to write the books that they love, and then work out how to market them. Having said that, as I'm sure people have said many, many times, of course, the sweet spot is finding, you know, the center of the Venn diagram between stuff you love to write and stuff other people actually like to read, and then, you know, get right in there in the center. And the honest answer when it comes to strategy is that although I basically wanted to write the books that I love to read and wanted to write, when I came up with the idea for the Crow Investigations book, I definitely had a very like excited, oh, this could be a, like, this is a solid series idea. And I did also have a standalone idea that I had already been working on a wee bit. And I did make the strategic decision to focus on the Crow books. And that was partly just because I was really excited. This idea had come to me and I was like, oh, you know, it was mainly passion. But I would be lying to you if there wasn't also an awareness that having decided to go indie and to be a publisher with my publisher hat on, series, really good idea. So that's the full honest answer on that.
Yeah, I think what I find particularly interesting about knowing about Clifton Strengths and the thinking strengths, because I'm, you know, I have six of them in my top 10.
Wins.
Strategic is my number two. It's how it feels like it is intuition. The thinking is so integral and happens so subconsciously that it's your intuition that makes all the decisions. So you don't feel like you're being consciously strategic because it's all going on in the back.
So true. And quite often later on I'll think, oh yeah, that was really smart, like that was a good call and good job, Sarah. Exactly that. I hadn't realized all the thinking and input that I'd yeah, that's interesting. Oh, strengths.
Yay. I love finding someone else who is into strengths. I'm gonna have to get your top 10 later when we finish recording.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what steps did you take then? What research did you do? Because you mentioned you like doing the research. when it came to deciding your covers, because I write urban fantasy too, and my covers look very different from yours. And so, yeah, I'm really intrigued to hear about what went into that and in what way your process may have been different from an Amazon first approach.
I'm glad you're asking, because I am quite proud of myself, because it was quite scary, because I'd been reading all the advice, I'd been doing my research, and the prevailing wisdom was that you look at the top 20 in Amazon, so you look at the top 20 urban fantasy books, and you, first off, you decide whether to go KU or wide by looking at that top 20. And if they're mostly KU, you go KU. So I looked at the top 20, 18 out of the 20 were KU, but I didn't want to go KU. I wanted to be wide. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to go. That was scary. But I was looking long term, and I kept on reminding myself of my personal reasons for doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at those books, I couldn't help but notice that they all had a certain sort of cover.
Mm-hmm.
And again, prevailing wisdom, you look at the top 20 and then you look for, you know, then you make cover that fits in there.
Mm-hmm.
But the two trad books, they were both trad, but the two wide books that weren't in KU were trad, and they had different covers,
mm-hmm.
that stood out from all the others, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so that set me on a path. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to blindly model one particular chart. Yeah. That is based on the publishing decision and the publishing strategy of the publishers in that chart.
Mm.
I'm going to look at what my strategy is and match my research, my comps, everything I do match to that same strategy.
Mm.
And I am really proud of myself, because as soon as I started doing that, it did help to sort of encourage me. I think if I'd stopped at that point and not had that thought, I think the fear would have probably even changed my strategy, because I didn't know for sure. Mm. It was all like a gut, as we were just saying, gut feeling. Anyway, yeah. So that sent me off. So then I was looking the Apple chart.
Mm-hmm.
The Kobo chart. Whenever I looked at Amazon, I only looked at people or publishers who were publishing in the way I was going to publish.
Mm.
And I used that to create all my comps for covers, blurbs, categories, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of created my own little folder of research from that. Those are the comps I showed my cover designer.
Mm-hmm.
And so on.
Yeah, I think it does really show how different your approach can be, like, and how much you need to think about. It's not as simple as which retailers are you going to put the book on. Like, what is going to appeal to readers on a different platform is going to be different, and you wouldn't think that automatically. So it's absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Okay, so how do you reach readers beyond Amazon? Because we all know it's so easy. I'm doing air quotes. It's so easy to reach readers on Amazon because you've got Amazon ads to use, and there are, you know, countless promo sites and all sorts that you can use. But it can sometimes be, it can seem trickier to find non-Amazon readers. So,
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not some sort of amazing guru expert in this field. There's a fantastic Facebook group called Wide for the Win, which I highly recommend. And I believe there is a book,
mm-hmm.
possibly with the same name, which is also great. So yeah, there are many, many authors who are absolutely killing it wide. Having said that, I do make consistent, decent sales, mm-hmm. on the Wide platforms. I'm very, very happy with how it's all going. So so with that caveat, I would say a lot of it, again, just comes down to telling people that you're on the other side. I mean, I fail at this every so often and sort of catch myself and think, hang on, when did I last share something on social media or target an ad directly to, you know, Kobo readers?
Mm.
So it's sort of transforming your own mindset to make sure that you always put all the links to all the stores when you mention your book, mm-hmm. or use a books to read link, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, as I think I just mentioned, you can target. So let's say if you're doing a Facebook ad, you can narrow down your audience to those with a Kobo reader or those with an Apple device or a Nook.
Yeah.
Another thing is really just by being on the stores, learning those stores, so spending time on them, doing the research on the stores in the same way, like we all haunt Amazon, myself very much included. But it's, I think what I've been doing a lot of is spending a lot, consciously spending a lot more time on the other stores, getting to know them, getting to know the categories, just looking at them from a reader's point of view, and then looking at them with my sort of publisher hat on as well, making notes. The individual retailers as well, I do recommend you go direct to them, and then you can take advantage of their store specific promotions. Kobo are fantastic for this. They have a promotions tab. I apply every month. As soon as the new promotions come out, I apply for loads. I get some every month. It's great. You know, I love Kobo. So there's that. I was very lucky recently. I was going to say I was lucky, but actually this is a tip. If you are in groups or you hear about webinars with, you know, places like Google Play and Apple, attend the free webinar. Because quite often at the end of the free webinar, they will give you an email address or some sort of contact. And then that way, follow it up. Definitely follow it up. It's a real person. It's not an algorithm. It's people merchandising and working at these stores. I did exactly what I've just advised. I attended a free webinar. I followed it up. And now I have an Apple rep who put me in a promotion in whichever month it was. Let's say August. Time is strange. You know, and that was my first time of that happening, to be clear. I'm still buzzing. So thrilled about it. But that was the sort of steps that made that happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I do seem to be waffling here. I had more to say on this than I realized.
Oh, that's fine. It's great.
So, yeah, there's also consistency. So, again, this isn't groundbreaking advice, but if you're going to be wide, be wide. Stick it. Because it's just not fair. Like, it's just easier. It's good for the stores. It's good for readers. And it helps your own head to be quite honest. You don't have to think, oh, what am I doing at the moment? You're just always, you're always talking about all the stores.
Yeah.
So I think it's just easier from that point of view.
You could quite upset readers, couldn't you, if you kept bobbing in and out of KU? You know, KU readers would get annoyed with you when you left. Wide readers would get annoyed with you when you went back in.
And another thing, I mean, another of my reasons for being wide that I left off before, but it's a big one, is to be in libraries. Because I'm a huge fan of libraries, as I'm sure we all are. And I want to be in libraries. So if you're going in and out, that makes libraries extremely, I mean, it just makes things a real headache, because libraries, I want to say they move slower. What I mean is they're more in the traditional model, and they're very, very busy people and most likely understaffed these days. So dodging in and out, it's not going to endear you to a librarian who is looking to add you to their catalogue for their library.
Absolutely.
So that's another bonus reason.
So you mentioned Facebook ads in there as well. What other advertising do you do? What are your top tips for advertising?
Well, at the moment, you've caught me at a great time, because I'm feeling very upbeat about advertising. And right now, my top tip is to do some. Because I started out and I ran, I don't know, a tiny amount of Amazon ads. Very, very anxious about spending money, wasting money. I did Mark Dawson's very good Ads for Authors course. I did the course. I think I went through the course twice. But Holly, did I actually run some ads? No, I did not. No, I did not. I would maybe think about it. I'd maybe research it a bit. I would do the course module again. I would set something up. I'd, you know, it would spend the money. I'd panic. I'd switch it off. Did a bit of that, basically. But this year, I decided that I was going to take action properly. So I started running some Facebook tests just this summer. And I'm really happy. It's gone really well. And I'm here with the shocking news that if you run a small business, advertising is a good idea. I know, you heard it here first. So that probably tells you that I'm not the best guru for tips. But so yes, doing it, obviously starting small with your with your budgets and keeping a hawk eye on them so that you don't spend money that you don't want to spend. Doing a course of some kind or getting a really good book or all of the above.
Yeah.
And in terms of more serious advice, I think trying to sort your mindset about it before you try and do it. Because what I was doing before in my panic cycle, I was panicking, but I also still felt a bit icky. I don't know. I felt a bit weird. Like I'd be bothering people as if I still had some sort of, I didn't realize I did, but I thought about it a lot and I journaled about it and I wrote a book about selling books. And that always helps me to clarify what I think when I when I write it out, trying to try and help other people. And it made me realize that I still had to clear out a few kind of negative beliefs around marketing and selling. And once I cleared those out, I then, as if by magic, was able to really commit to trying Facebook ads.
Yeah, absolutely. I get a lot of that. And it's like with so many things in life, the mindset shift has to happen first before action can actually happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm trying to get better at doing BookBub ads. They're a la carte.
Oh yeah.
You know, cost per click ads.
How are you finding them?
I've dabbled in the past and it's more, I need to crack on and do this now. That's where I'm at. So, but that's a good way of reaching non-Amazon readers as well, because like with Facebook, you can target specific retailers. So
I shall put them on my list for next. I was going to say that's another thing with or easier advertising. Obviously, BookBub does go to all the stores and the, you know, most of the other, I think all of the other newsletter kind of promo sites like Bargain Booksy and so on go to, you know, multiple retailers. So
yeah,
that's also like quite a low difficulty way of promoting to all the stores.
Yeah, absolutely. I just remembered something I was going to say when you mentioned about going to the webinars. Just sheer coincidence, earlier today I got an invitation from Barnes and Noble to do one of their webinars and I signed up for it, and it was like, it was just a gut instinct thing. I was like, yeah, I could do that. It might be interesting. I might learn something and this looks like a cool topic. But now that you've said that about following up and getting an email address, I've got like little light bulbs going off.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
Good decision, Hall. Good decision.
Absolutely. Gold star.
So yeah, exciting things. So yeah. Okay. So speaking of mindset, when it comes to selling our books, how important is it to separate ourselves from our books when it comes to marketing them?
Completely and utterly vital. Well, if you want to be able to do it comfortably, effectively, regularly, consistently, then yeah, it's so important. And it is hard to do, but one way that I find quite helpful is to start the next book. So that always helps me to sort of detach a wee bit from my the book I've just finished, if you like. That can help. Sort of really consciously putting your business hat on, really helpful. Another thing that I think is quite a good technique is, well, it's not even a technique, I suppose, it's an important thing to do, is to really not just put your business hat on, that's one side, but really shift your perspective to the reader and start framing everything you think about in terms of the reader, what they want, what they are going to get, what benefit they're going to get, what experience are they going to have. And if you can connect that to really wonderful experiences that you've had yourself as a consumer of TV, film and books, if you can connect those things that you're offering with that positive experience as a consumer of entertainment, I think it will really help you to feel generally much more positive, because you are very clear in your mind that what you are saying, what you are offering as a publisher is, you know, 6 hours of wonderful escapist, you know, snarky banter feels, whatever your experience is that you've identified, mm-hmm. that's what you're offering. And then you hopefully know what a great time you've had reading a book like that, mm. how it just lifted your day and your week, how much you love doing that, how much, you know, that's your treat. Mm. That's what you asked for your birthday. That's the joy in, like, one of the joys in your life.
Yeah.
And if you can connect that very, very firmly and consistently in your own mind, I think it really helps to motivate and make you feel a great deal more positive about telling people that this amazing experience that they're going to love exists.
Yeah. One of the things I've tried to do this year is give my books away as gifts. It's a kind of like, it's, you know, I'm not very good at like tooting my own horn, you know, and I realized I had a whole group of friends who didn't even know I was an author. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but it had never come up. And then I told them, and they were absolutely bowled away. And they thought it was amazing. So, yeah. So
that's lovely.
Be a bit bolder and like, be like, I did this thing and you might like it.
So difficult. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not gonna minimize how difficult it is. I'm, I don't know, 4 weeks away from release, and I'm an absolute ball of anxiety over it. And I am every time, and I think I always will be, because I care and because like you, like all other authors, you know, we write something, we create something from our heads, from our souls, and then we put it out in the world and say, judge us, please. Just, it's terrifying. All of that, it's terrifying. Yeah. And I think it's good to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also really important to acknowledge that it is, nobody else cares. Mm. We care. Maybe our friends, once we've told them, Holly, will care. Because they'll be supporting us. Those who love us, they care because they love us and they want to support us. That's great. But even then, they don't care that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that much about my friends' jobs. I mean, I know enough to be supportive, but I don't deep down genuinely care that much. I care about them.
Yeah.
I care about them. I don't care about the nitty gritty of their day job. Only how it affects them. And generally speaking, like most people, they don't care. They don't care. They won't notice. Mm-hmm. If you try something in marketing, in your book, creatively, and it doesn't work, no one's going to notice. No one's going to care. And even if a few people do, you just do something else. The failure will only be in our minds.
Yeah.
We will be the only ones aware of it.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, if we can free ourselves, I'm working on it. I am working on it. I have definitely spoken to some really amazingly successful authors, women authors, who have something in common. And the thing they have in common is that they just keep trying stuff. They take action all the time. And I am trying very, very hard to learn from them. It's just a book. No one's going to die. You know, that kind of, I literally have it written up. Like, it's just a book. No one's going to die, because the fear feels extremely real.
Yeah.
And extremely threatening. But it's just a book.
Yeah.
Or just a blog post, or just an ad, or just an Instagram post. It's fine.
And if something doesn't hit, if a book or even a series doesn't take off, write another one. Just keep going.
Yeah. Consistency is huge, so just keeping on going. And also, it's too soon to say whether something's worked or not. That's another thing. We're too close, both emotionally and just in from a time point of view. You don't know if a book maybe doesn't perform what you were, you know, what you were hoping, and that is, it is crushing and it's demotivating, but you don't know. In 10 years' time, there could be a particular zeitgeist moment for exactly the book that you wrote. It gets picked up. It becomes huge. You don't know. Or in 10 years' time, you could be doing your accounts and you could be looking at the line item for that book that really, you know, the launch didn't go that well and you felt really crap about it for a few weeks. And then you kind of didn't really do much advertising on it because you lost confidence in it, and it all just, and every time you thought about it, you sort of, I should do something, or I should recover that, but I just, you just didn't feel great about it. So it kind of languished. In 10 years' time, I would almost lay money, if I was a betting woman, that you would look at that line item for that book and go, oh, blimey, that's actually made me a really decent amount of money over those 10 years.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a new book coming out next month as well. Ooh. And it's...
Sorry, I mean, congratulations.
But yeah, it's that, those nerves and that that tension, like, is this, is it gonna perform like I need it to? Am I gonna make back what I've invested in the editing and the cover and the BookBub feature deal? And like, you know, there's that the pit of the stomach kind of it's a terrifying time, but yeah, all we can do is just keep going.
I mean, you're so right. Then you mentioned the money side of it, and of course that's a whole, that's an extra layer of stress that we have. You know, I mean, this is, you know, this is how I'm paying the bills. So if a book doesn't do well and the household income drops, you know, it, or at the moment any of us are, you know, attaching money, which of course we all are, that is a way that in this world we do assign value and success, whether or not we're relying on it to pay our bills. And so that is stressful. It does add another layer. Again, I mean, the only sort of positive strategy I can suggest for that, and I'm saying it to myself as well, is very much in that separation of precious author creative Holly / Sarah, there we are, delicate flowers in the corner surrounded by candles and, you know, chocolate. That's the author.
Yeah,
the stuff we were just talking about, the BookBub deal, the cost of the editing and the cover, that's our business hat on. That, nothing to do, like strict separation. Business hat on, you are running a small business with ridiculously low overheads, which you can reach global consumers. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so again, it's that projected over 5 years, like any other business would.
Yeah.
That investment, I've not got 3 months, or I didn't make it back, I'm a failure. It's 5 years projection.
Yeah.
You know, and another thing that helps me sometimes, like when I've been investing in translation projects, and I look at them, I mean, they are long-term investments, but I very much look at them as long-term investments. It's like, if I take that chunk of money, I don't know, I'm going to say £1,000 to make it easy. Translations cost more than that, but let's say £1,000. As a business hat, £1,000 into a translation, 5 years' time, what will that have made? Well, let's say it's made £500 over the 5 years. So £1,500 in 5 years' time. You're like, well, that's hardly worth it. Well, if you can show me a bank account that I could put £1,000 in, and in 5 years' time, I would have made whatever, I'm not good at percentages, then I would have made half as much again.
Yeah.
I would definitely put my savings in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, absolutely. Sorry, these are all the things that I do in my head.
No, it's really, really valuable. Thank you. This is helping me so much.
I'm so glad.
I'm sure it will help all of our listeners as well. Okay, So with our business hats on, we all know it's important to have an author brand. So how can we go about establishing one of those?
Okay, so it's such a great question. And the word brand is terrifying. So first off, just to say, your brand is everything that you do online, all your books, your author bio, everything. So the fact of it is that you will have one, whether you establish one or not. You will have one, even if you don't pay it any attention. So that's important. What's also important is nobody's going to die. It's fine. You can hone it at any point. You can change. You can learn. You can get better at it. It is fine, you know? So two things. Another thing about author brand that I found useful is that you think again about the reader. What experience are they getting from your books? You can look at your reviews or get somebody else to look at them, which is what I do because I don't read reviews, and pick out positive things, phrases and words that readers have used to describe your books. That will help you to see what experience they're having, because it can be hard because we're too close.
Yeah.
Write out those words, write out those phrases. Think about the kind of, if you're in a, well, you should be in a solid in a genre, let's say urban fantasy. Think about what are the things in your books that are solidly urban fantasy. What are the things in your books that are sort of more unique to you, which are that your particular flavor of this book? Write those out, and then think about other films, TV shows, other books, other things that kind of fit with that, that are similar to it or give a similar experience, a similar emotional experience, similar feels. Again, that's not a very precise word, but I hope you know what I mean. The kind of feeling. Write those things down. And then from that, you can start to think of imagery, colors, activities. And it can just help you to get a sort of master list, if you like, of stuff that feels like it feels to be in your books. And use that. And it, what I love about this is that you do this work, which is quite fun, really, to be honest. And then it helps, because then when you're thinking, well, what do I post on Facebook? You look at your list and you can, for me, it helps me generate ideas about the sorts of things that I should be talking about. Or the sorts of pictures that I should be sharing, or the books that I'd recommend. Again, I'm only going to do this from an authentic. It's still just me. I'm not going to recommend a book I haven't read or, you know, I didn't love. But I'm not, I read really widely, but I'm only going to recommend certain books because they fit in my brand. So it helps make decisions, which I find cuts down my resistance. And it also helps me to keep my business hat on when I'm doing those forward facing things, which I find quite scary. But then I've got my author Sarah, my public author Sarah hat on. And because I've written down what that's kind of defined as, it's all me, it's all genuine, but it's those facets of me, those things that I enjoy in particular, those particular things. It just really helps me show up in that way and make those decisions. I don't think I've explained that very well, but hopefully.
Oh, no, you have. It was really clear. One of my co-hosts, Angeline, is a huge coffee addict. And so her Instagram is full of like pictures of cups of coffee with a bit of cake by them, you know.
Lovely.
And it's a really defining part of who she is. And you know, it's obviously so relatable because so many people drink coffee, but I've that's one of those things that I've never quite pinned down, like do I have a thing? I don't have a thing like drinking coffee, or like Mark Leslie Lefebvre collects skulls, you know, and he's the skull
guy. It does help if you have a thing. I know I was struggling to start with when I first started my newsletter. I was like, oh, what's again exactly that, what do I do? I drink a lot of tea. So to start with, I gave like tea recommendations, and I would give like a book recommendation. because we're all readers, mm-hmm. to your recommendation. And so I think you're absolutely right. Picking a thing, mm. not worrying about it too much. Picking a thing is a great way to start. Mm. And then over time, the more books you write, the more reader interaction or more feedback through reviews and so on that you get, you can start to develop it and sort of narrow down or widen, I guess. Yeah. If all you've got is tea, which is where I started, I widened. it's that kind of exciting thing when you sort of find your tribe. Like, we both got visibly giddy when we started to talk about Clifton Strengths. And it's that thing, if there's something that you're really into, and it's not, and you're happy for it to be part of your brand, it doesn't have to be like fitting in perfectly with whatever you think should be the idea. You're happy for it to be, then embrace it, because there will be people out there who are getting giddy over that same thing. It's hard.
I used to, in my newsletter, I used to share a lot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer gifts.
Oh, I love Buffy. I love Buffy so much.
Oh, me too. Oh, I miss Buffy.
I miss Buffy. I often say, what would Buffy do? I have a Sunnydale High School mug on my desk. So,
Oh, it's like we're one person.
So yes, brilliant. Buffy.
Yeah. Okay, so a big part of your author brand, particularly around the non-fiction stuff, revolves around the worried writer concept. So what tips do you have for writers who are prone to anxiety over their decisions?
So many. I mean, I think we've covered some already. A lot of it is, for me, is to do with recognizing that my fears feel very real, but that they're not. That the danger that my fears are trying to protect me from, which is some sort of, my fear of failure, my fear of embarrassing myself, my fear of exposing myself too much, my fear of being judged, I guess, all of those fears, my body and my mind interpret them as, there is a lion and you're going to die. And it's recognizing that the fear of sending that email, newsletter, or trying an ad, your brain isn't very bright. And that part of your brain is not very bright, and it's trying to protect you from death.
Certain
death. So that kind of recognizing that and talking yourself through it. I talk to my worried part as a separate. I have a worried dragon. I talk to my worried dragon. I say, thanks for your concern, but you just sit there. I'm going to get on with this, because actually I hear your concern. I really appreciate it. I know you love me, but it's fine. So there's that. And sometimes journaling about this stuff can help. I think through writing. So obviously, again, not for everybody, but if you think through writing, it can be really useful.
Yeah.
Force yourself, set a timer, sit down. What am I afraid of? Why aren't I doing this? Write. See what comes up. Because sometimes then you kind of have to do it, because you've realized that those fears, it's fine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Another thing is to break things down. My other, my gold star tip is always to break down whatever you're going to do, whatever you are too anxious to do, break it down into the smallest possible steps, the tiniest ones. So sending a scary email, sending the newsletter, which I always have resistance. I'm better than I used to be, but I still feel the fear. And so I will schedule it. But I'm a big planner. So in my planner, I won't write send newsletter. I write draft newsletter. That's all I have to do. I have to draft. If I was really feeling the fear and I was really blocked on something, it wouldn't say draft newsletter. It would say open MailerLite. That's it. All you got to do is open it. Mm-hmm. Get a ticket, you're done.
Yep.
Same with like email, same with approaching the manuscript. If I'm really terrified, all I have to do is open Word. That's it. If I do that, get the gold star, get the cookie, I'm good. Anyway, so back to the newsletter. I quite literally write draft newsletter. Let's say on Monday, 11 a.m., draft newsletter, get my tick, lovely, lovely. And that's fine, I can do that because that's not scary. Just creating the thing. No one's going to see it. It's all fine. And then the next day, I've got edit newsletter. Again, no one's going to see it. It's fine, making it better. I love editing. Great. Done. Wednesday, send test email. Again, it's just to me. It's fine. It's all good. Thursday, schedule newsletter. And you'll notice I don't write send newsletter. No, too scary. Schedule newsletter, because that's all I can manage. But somehow between scheduling it to be sent out 3 hours later and then me going on to other tasks, trying not to think about it, knowing in the back of my mind that I could still go in and stop that queue and it wouldn't go out, I would say 99.9% of the time, it just goes out. It's fine. It's done.
Yeah.
So blow by blow account. A day in the life. Very tiring. It's tiring. All I say to anyone out there that feels anxiety is that I empathize. I know how tiring it is, but you can do it because I am a jelly and I have done so many things that I find hard. And if I can do it, you definitely can.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. Okay, so that pretty much wraps things up. So where can our listeners find out more about you and your books?
Oh, well, thank you so much. I've had such a lovely time. Can I just ask, I don't know when this will be going out. There is a, I was going to mention my nonfiction book, which is called Stop Worrying, Start Selling, just because it's a covers a lot of the mindset around marketing and so on. But the reason I was asking on when this is going out is that it is going to be part of a story bundle, which is running from tomorrow till the end of November.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This will be going out in 2 weeks, I think.
Super. So if it's okay with you,
yeah,
if I could just give the story bundle a quick mention.
Of
it's
course.
At storybundle.com/writing. And it is the Writer's Career Toolkit Bundle. And it is a pay as you want kind of a model. I think it starts at like $5 for 5 books. And there are wonderful books in there. Joanna Penn is in there. It's curated by Kevin J. Anderson. Anyway, there are 15 books on writing and marketing and publishing in it. And I just wanted to give it a wee mention.
Yeah, that's fine. We can put a link in the show notes as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And other than that, you can find me at sarah-painter.com. And if you want all the backlist episodes of the Worried Writer podcast, more of my blather, then that is worriedwriter.com.
Lovely. Thank you. So we always finish things off at Unstoppable Authors with a would you rather question.
The fear on my face.
So Sarah, would you rather be able to visit one fictional world over and over and over again as many times as you want, or visit every fictional world you would want to but only once?
Oh, that is an evil question. Okay, now this really is going to be on brand because I'm going to ask you, am I guaranteed safety?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to choose one fictional world that I would go to again and again and again because I know myself. I'd probably just be borderline too scared to even go there. I can choose a safe one. Return.
Yeah. Or make it safe, like carve out a little,
a little nook.
Oh, that's wonderful. I would probably do the same, in all honesty. Yeah.
I know I want to be cool, but I'm just not.
Yeah, I have that adventurous spirit, really. Not...
That's why I write books. Yeah. I write books so I can be adventurous in my pajamas.
From the safety of my own home.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you very much, Sarah. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, thank you, Holly.
I hope you found this interview helpful and inspiring. Don't forget to answer our question of the week, which is, why have you chosen the publishing path you're currently on? Let us know on Instagram or in our Facebook group. And remember that if you want to join us for Sprints and Giggles and get all of the other benefits, you can do so over at patreon.com/unstoppableauthors. And please do share the podcast online and tag us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Unstoppable Authors.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Unstoppable Authors podcast. We'll be back next week with more of our tenacity and worldly wisdom.
Don't forget to visit our website to get the show notes and heaps of helpful blog articles at unstoppableauthors.com.
And join our Guild of Unstoppable Authors, and you will not only hear from us every week, but you will also get a free digital copy of my book, 30 Days of Worldbuilding.
If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review.